Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred. They just don't leave enough. They don't leave enough time to come forth. I mean, I think we gotta.
Are you feeling as responsible, accountable, and capable as you did when you made that narrative?
I think so.
Yeah, are you?
But I feel like if
tell
I was
me
really
something about it. Tell me something about. All right, let's dissect this a little bit. What does it mean to you to be responsible, accountable, and capable? Let's look at those terms here. How do these apply to you? How do these apply in general?
TJ, let's go with take two here. Let's go with take two. Let's start this fucker again one more time. Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred. Ah, finally, I got it done.
Well done. Well done. What did you get done, Fred?
The fourth coming.
Ah, you came forth.
I came forth.
Good for you. Good for you, buddy.
So last time we were talking, you said something about wanting to know about me being responsible, capable, and something else.
And accountable, because that's what you say. And I want to just poke around a little bit here, since you say that in your opener here that you're responsible, accountable, capable for helping people find their true voice. Tell me more.
All right. I can do this. Deep breath, like Kundalini.
Oh, and I was saying, what does that mean? What does responsible, accountable, capable mean? Is it a moving target? I always kind of think it is. It's like, what am I responsible for? What am I accountable to? What am I capable of? You know,
of this reflection in the window in the back? That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, you're just trying to change the conversation here.
No, I'm not. No, it's part of being overly responsible for my environment. And
yeah, no, I see that. It's interesting. Yeah,
it's interesting. It's a distraction.
Yeah, you might need some curtains there, buddy.
I have some.
You could also tidy up that that little area back there next to your window. I notice you tend to keep a lot of stuff there. Alexandra's art stuff? Is that her creative stuff there?
Oh, it's like hookah paraphernalia.
It's hookah paraphernalia. All right, there you go. No more distractions.
All right, so responsible, accountable, capable. All right, there's three different words.
Because those are some big words there, man. Yeah, responsible, accountable, capable. Let's talk about that.
All right, let's dissect it a little bit. We can go with this. So,
responsible first of all, to what? Accountable.
You know, I think
to
we're all responsible for how things, like, you know, how things unfold in our world. Ultimately, the last filter before, you know, really taking on whatever the world has to offer comes through this thing called us, you know, this meat bag, this thing, the skin bag that, you know, there's like, I'm responsible for the world as it occurs to me. Mm-hmm. Are you rolling with that? Is that
I'm rolling. You got me. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Able to respond. Responsible.
And then, you know, if I'm going to walk around as the true voice guy, you know, if I'm going to like be the true voice with Dr. Fred or find your true voice or true voice podcasting, a true voice course, if I'm going to actually, you know, hook that banner around me, then what I'm declaring at that point is that I have some access to sourcing people to finding their true voice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to that in my presence, you have a better shot than maybe being in other people's presence to find your true voice. Like that's that's what my intention is, you know, is to create a space for a true voice to surface, to arise, you know, to come forth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want true voice to come forth.
Yeah. And how does one define what's true?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me, like, how does one define coming forth? And that would have been a different thing. How does one define what's true? So what is true is it that's a moving target for sure. So what is true is there's not something that is true and then it's true. Not very much is like true 1 minute to the next. You know, one thing that's true is we tend to use our voices to express ourselves. You and I have had many conversations even this week about this. Like we tend to use our voices to be how we attempt to effectively communicate with each other. And our voices are usually equated or synonymous with what the vocality, the utterances that we make. We call that a voice, right? When someone does art or does dancing or does singing, we don't frequently equate that to voice. We equate that to drawing or singing or dancing, right? And not necessarily voice. So we, you know, the whole idea of podcasting and frankly, the whole idea of these active communication with somebody frequently revolves around this notion of voice, like what do you say so that the other person can hear or take in, listen to what it is that you're attempting to express. This notion of expression is the goal of human beings once they're together, or even if they're not together, like to make a difference in the world, to actually communicate. Is what's here to be had. Still with me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably. We might have lost some of our listeners by now.
Yeah. Thousands.
Well, at least 50%. Cause if there was two and one dropped out, that would be 50%.
Yeah, so communication being the essence of how human beings relate and relate. Right. Yeah, and yeah.
What's the point of human beings getting
and the communication of the voice, the use of the voice.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I took poetic license and changed the word voice to be all forms of self-expression and communication. So... Mm-hmm. That's where the creative aid comes in. And you can see like right over there. Like watch this, like, oops, like right there. right there. That's Creative Eight. That's the book, The Creative Eight. Yeah.
The masterpiece right there.
It's written by me. Yeah. But as I told you that day, it really wasn't even written by me, but that's a whole different story. I had someone write that shit for me and then tell me when it was written, and then told, and then I was like, okay, thank you. I paid him, and there that was it.
Okay.
I mean, I gave him all the ideas, but then he wrote it, and now my name is on the title. I do wonder how many people did that. So is writing part of voice? Is writing part of voice, Sam? That's what I want to know. You know, is writing, dancing, singing, cooking, cleaning, photography, art, music, dancing, are they part of voice? I say yes. So if that's the case, if one is voicing their self-expression through other forms of creative outlets, you know, performing arts or visual arts, then that gives me a better chance. You see, if I actually spread the definition of voice out to include pretty much anything, then
you're pretty much covered. Then
I'm covered, and then I can and then I can radically claim at that point, having changed the definition of the source thing that we're looking at to include pretty much everything, to be responsible, accountable, and capable. Because
as long as the term voice, as long as you make it so general as to be meaningless, then you can claim responsibility and accountability around that definition
and capability,
since it's now meaningless, and so no one can then actually gauge whether or not you can be responsible or accountable or capable in that domain, because it's now meaningless what the definition is.
Well, I don't know if I would go with that last half, but I was with you until the second clause is like that somehow that nobody liked it. That's not really fair at all. I don't think that's what it is. I think that it can be proven, because if it's a broad enough definition to include everything, then it happens all the time in my presence. And therefore, I am, in fact, responsible, capable, and accountable for creating it. Just the way it is, Sam.
I see. I see something very messianic in that.
Yeah, it's just, okay, be ready on that button. There's always a chance for taking me.
I'm just having fun. We all know that in your presence, truth does tend to emerge. That is for sure. And that's why I keep on showing up here every time every week, is to connect and have a little fun and see what is true, see what wants to come out as the true voice of the moment.
Right.
And yes, it is a moving target for sure. And it's exciting to do in your presence. And so
thank you. What do you have when you think of voice, you know, when you think of true voice, or even, you know, because there's other people, like when I was first developing this brand, there was a fair amount of skepticism that I wasn't really saying anything. And how could I actually develop a brand that doesn't even have any kind of metric or measuring tool? Like, everyone always thinks they're being true.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And part of my intention with that initial line of inquiry was to, joyfully, because I know that you and I have a trustworthy dynamic, and we can relate, and we can laugh, we can mess around, and just to sort of steel man the whole idea of true voice, just as a way of provoking, being provocative, and I suppose that's something that I like to do, is to be provocative. That's part of my true voice, provocation, and not to try to be dismissive or question, but simply because I think provocation is important, and I think that there can be a danger to sincerity, especially when it gets into the domain of something as sort of unambiguous as the notion of truth versus non-truth, truth versus falsehood, truth versus its opposite. When we are playing with with the domain of the unambiguous like that. And I think it we have to be very well, for me, it almost requires something to be provocative, because it's like the moment something becomes overly sincere or locked into a notion of truth versus falsehood, or truth versus its absence, suddenly there's something missing. It's like the life gets pulled and drawn out of the dynamic of the relating. There's something spontaneous, I think, that is required in a true voice, in an authentic communication. And there's a requirement for spontaneity. One thing I know truth isn't, is it's not a collection of biases and opinions and thoughts that create this amalgamation in one's mind about what is true for them, because that's relative truth. And relative truth has no place in the domain of real truth. And so to me, truth is the feedback that occurs spontaneously with Jimi Hendrix's guitar, with his amplifier and his guitar, because the guitar is set at such a high volume and the amplifier set at such a high volume that something explosive occurs in that dynamic between his electric guitar and the amplifier that creates a deeper truth than the notes themselves. You know, truth is the richness that occurs in the moment that invokes something beyond the mundane, I suppose. And yeah, anyway, not to try to wax poetic too much.
That's
here,
so great that you were looking at that, because I actually, it's so funny, man. I was looking for the second half of that phrase. I looked up wax infinitely, but that wasn't it. I was actually looking for, what the hell is he doing? I think he's doing this waxing thing. And I was like, what is it called, so I can come back and actually give you a little heat about it?
Yeah, yeah.
And sure enough, you know, seriously, this is what I came up with, like that, you know?
You just came up with?
Like, thesaurus for talking too much, you know?
Thesaurus for talking too much.
And I was looking for waxing. I was looking for waxing, but I didn't really see it, so.
Waxing didn't come in there.
No, and... You know, maybe if we view it all.
Waxing talks a lot. This is, yeah.
This waxing is, poetically.
This thesaurus, yeah, a lot of words. Is not giving us very interesting results here.
Waxing, like waxing poetically.
Becoming garrulous.
Loquacious.
Loquacious.
That's what you were doing.
Yes, yes.
I'm just going with loquacious, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then garrulous shows up again.
Or just, but, yeah.
The homeboy one is just becoming wordy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's funny because, like, at this point, you know, here, let's take this down. Hopefully none of my porn shines through.
Then we'd be getting some real true voice from Fred.
You know, it's funny that you ask about this true voice and then you actually decide to take the mic and go where nobody goes with your voice. Like, nobody else I've ever known goes out there speaking shit about shit, like speaking like you do when you're waxing poetically. So one has to really, I know the listeners are hanging on to the edge of their seat wondering if I'm going to flip the tables a little bit now, hoping that I do. Like, you tell me what the word, you know, what does truth mean? You call it unambiguous. That was a very interesting term to describe the distance between truth and the absence of truth, or truth and false. And So what makes that shit unambiguous anyways? Why is truth unambiguous?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's, I suppose truth implies something if we're looking at it from the lens of what it tends to mean in, say, well, for example, if we look at truth from the sort of scientific definition, it would be something that is truly unambiguous, that it's clear and it is, and no one can argue with it because it is, it is distinct from ambiguity. If it's a scientific truth, or if it's a, and I suppose that is kind of where that, I mean, I don't even know where the term even really comes from, but it seems to be something that can be agreed upon, a principle or a notion or a communication that can be agreed upon, that is, and in that respect, I suppose it's unambiguous. Oh, are you muted? Yeah, you're muted.
Can you give me an example of one of these truths?
Okay.
Don't be careful here. Don't
be going. Well, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Truth. One could say that it is true that the gravitational pull of the Earth is responsible for my body being able to stay in this room and on this Zoom call with you right now.
All right. And so you're willing to go with the idea that for the length of time, either up till now or like into the infinite future, that will always be the case. That gravity is that solid of a notion that there no other explanation could possibly outdo gravity, making gravity indeed at least modestly ambiguous.
Modestly unambiguous.
No, well, I'm saying, is it possible that gravity is only a like a fleeting belief of
humanity? Oh yeah, yes, absolutely. There's a very real possibility that I only believe that I'm actually in this physical form right now, having this conversation with you, and that some force called gravity is somehow responsible for me being able to stay in this chair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about
definitely.
I'm only going for gravity. I'm not going with all this other existential nonsense. Just the idea that the reason you're on the ground might have nothing to do with some kind of force that sits in the middle of the earth that's pulling at you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It might be something else altogether. It just might be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to call that as at least a possibility that our
there's a possibility there? Yeah. Possibility. Yeah.
Like, I don't think they talked about gravity in the Bible, for instance. I'm not sure if they did, but I'm pretty sure they didn't. But not that the Bible knows anything either, after all.
Right, right.
So, Sam, we're running this one into the ground a little bit. So I do have another question for you, though. And, you know, with all true affection and love, I really want to hear a little bit about how you strung together these two words, Zen and warrior.
Yeah. Yeah. Zen is, it points in the direction of a mindset of presence and equanimity, which I find a valuable trait.
Are you responsible, accountable, or capable about any of that Zen shit?
I suppose I am responsible to my best ability to at least point my attention in the direction on a regular basis of being in a space of equanimity and peace. Yeah.
Equanimity and peace. Those are like functions of, those are like byproducts or something of Zen, do you think?
Well, that's a curious question, really, because then it's the question then is, what is Zen? And Zen implies a sort of an infinite nothingness. It implies an awareness without substance, which, of course, is just an implication. And emptiness, an emptiness of form.
And so in an everyday life, where are we going to find, you want to find some Zen? where are we going to look?
Well, actually we don't need to look anywhere.
It's everywhere or nowhere or both or what?
It's in all the places that we are not looking.
So this is pretty similar. You're left in a pretty similar state to be in. And if you're responsible for that happening in your presence, and it's happening anyways, no matter what, anyhow, like in all places where we're not and we are looking, then that's kind of like a soft edge. You're taking responsibility for shit that's happening anyways, and you can't really be proven to be either caused or correlated to you being present in the scene at all.
It's totally true. And how do you tell whether this is my true voice or not in the Zen? So let me ask the master of the true voice, how do you tell whether or not I am the Zen warrior as the true voice guy? And am I going to be more Zen warrior in your presence? Am I going to be more closer to that or farther away from that? That's a good question.
It is a good question. Really good.
Yeah. Yeah. At least you're asking the right questions. That's for sure. And I think part of finding one's true voice is asking the right questions.
Right.
So there we go.
Right.
I think we may have just hit the nail on the head here about, we sort of circumnavigated the question to where we got to right here, which is you ask better questions than most.
Well, I ask better questions. And you know, the answers we get are so ubiquitous that there's no way to prove them false. So, and not that proof is important, but the idea of Zen and truth being related to each other is kind of interesting as well, right? Like in order to find either of those two terms, you have to have, if you're not going to just take your basic scientific gravity-based definition of truth, if you're going to let truth be ambiguous, if you're going to let truth be ambiguous out there in the form and the formless, out there in the unseeable and all that, you know, the non-understandable, the emptiness, the omnipresent emptiness, then truth and Zen have an interrelation with each other at a very high level. I think the next thing to take on, maybe in the next half hour after we take a extremely well-needed break here, will be... we'll be comparing like how warrior and voice might have an interrelationship. I think that's kind of interesting too. And pretty soon we're actually might get to the point where Zen warrior and true voice are exactly the same as each other, which would really kind of be super interesting. And we would have to
maybe it turns out that we're actually exactly the same as each other.
That's where we're going with this. And for me, that level of merger is the awesomeness. It's the denial of separateness at its very core. And frankly,
I know I've been in certain states of mind at certain points where I've questioned whether I was Sam Morris or Fred Moss. I've had that moment.
You have. I've heard you say that. Yeah.
I've had shifts of consciousness where I'm like, I think I'm Fred Moss right now. Well, that's interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
But then again, I've also been Jesus Christ too, and I've also been Lucifer. So
what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
I think one thing to
and I think maybe they're all kind of the same too. We're going to include TJ with this too. Sorry, TJ.
TJ, you got to help us out. Like we're looking, we're looking for a life raft here, TJ. we got Lucifer, Jesus, Fred, Sam coming forth, the whole thing. Yeah, that's right. Land us, beam us up. Beam us up, TJ. It's time to go. Shit, man. Land a commercial. Land a commercial. Don't be keeping the conversation going, TJ. We both need a break. We're running out of energy. TJ, land the commercial, bro. Oh my God, we had a 2-second commercial, Sam. That was not enough time to capture my breath. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's clear. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but as two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Frey. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So, welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred. There we go.
All right. Ready for round two?
Round two, let's rock this thing. That's good. Let's go hard. Let's go hard.
All right. So as we're listening, as we're on ad break there, it started to occur to me, what is the true voice of a schizophrenic?
Well, First thing you have to do is you have to define schizophrenia. And that particular term has gone through so many changes. Back in the day, a guy named Kreplin, I believe, was the first dude who coined the phrase. And it wasn't anything like what it looks like now. And this idea that schizophrenia is like two minds, you know, like, you know, two different ways of thinking, that's certainly not schizophrenia. There's no part of clinical, if someone shows up with two minds, no doctor is actually going to properly diagnose them as schizophrenia. And then the whole idea really becomes is that, is there or has there ever been a diagnosis called schizophrenia? And when you really dive into it, you could make a very strong case. And I make this case as someone who's diagnosed thousands of people with that condition, certainly been around tens of thousands of people who at some point in their life have been diagnosed with that condition. And you could just make a case that the diagnosis itself and the treatments that are offered in order to deal with that diagnosis create a level of like burned out psychosis, a way of thinking that is so muted and so muffled and so like, you know, driven by hearing voices inside your head and being run by them as if we're not, first of all, but like actually being run by them or seeing things or seeing things that other people can't see are, the negative symptoms, which are just, being like very slow and your interactions and the negative symptoms have a whole different flair that come with this diagnosis of schizophrenia. So I'm left with the idea that there may not be even such thing as schizophrenia and that there's the distance between schizophrenia and any of us is only in the drugs and diagnosis that the schizophrenias carry.
Yeah. I don't know if we've ever talked about this.
I know, but you have a family member. You have like, right? Are you going to go here? You don't have to.
No, not going to go there. I was just going to say for my entire life, pretty much, I've had this sort of what I would describe as in the very, very, I'm very close to a very fluid identity. What I mean by that is the identity that I would that most people would associate as me, and that I tend to carry around as my personality. Just in the same way that I carry around my physical form as the form that moves around that gets called Sam, and there's a certain personality and certain characteristics that people associate with me. It doesn't feel fixed in quite the same way that I think a lot of people tend to experience a sense of a fixed personality or a fixed identity. I used to just spontaneously, especially at parties back in college, and I've done this many times since then too, but I used to do it a whole lot more, just become different people. And it was not even really like I was acting so much as I was just doing different identities, just being different. And to the degree to which it actually would sometimes be a little bit off-putting and maybe even scare people because I was so in that space of that identity that people couldn't recognize my normal characteristics that they were accustomed to. They couldn't find the normal Sam persona in there that they were accustomed to. And so it would be a little bit, it's one of those things where the laughter would sort of subside at a certain point and people would be left with what's actually going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And because I found that I have always had a sort of facility with being able to be different people.
Yeah.
And I've found it interesting that it seems like our personalities to me feel largely like an adaptive trait versus something that are fixed for a reason and that must remain fixed. And I'm wondering if maybe that which we call schizophrenia is an absence of that adaptive trait towards a fixed identity. And that the people who possess what we might label as schizophrenia are more fluid in their identity because they lack the adaptive trait of fixating one persona and practicing that persona repeatedly enough so that it becomes hardwired as the only thing that they experience.
All right. Well, the purity of what you're saying, the idea that, you know, I think there's a, my original thought about what you're saying is, it sure does make it seem that it's almost pathological. It requires effort to remember who I was yesterday so that I can be the same today, so that people can like, so that people can count on me to be similar. And, you know, I'm the true voice guy. Like that's what I do. I'm like representative of, you know, bringing people their authenticity. And that's who I was yesterday. And tomorrow I, with all, you know, with all good judgment, I should probably remain at least somewhat committed or dedicated to continuing that persona. From a business standpoint, if I were to shift that and say, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore, it would disrupt a lot of people who now count on me to be a stand for that particular way of being. There, at any given moment, however, if I'm not a fixed way of being, I could easily become something else. You know, I could easily take on different things and really pick and choose what interests me about particular things. You know, the Healing the Healer course talks frequently about like becoming a barista, for instance. And I could really like become completely committed to the recipes and the style and the sizes and my customers, like, you know, the machines that it takes to run a coffee shop or to be someone who pours coffee all day long. And that could be a new level of commitment that could, you know, similarly just replace this at any given level. Like I could actually transpose this in some ways. You know, as a musician, you could get that while you were playing Herbie Hancock for a while, and then you start playing, let's say Jimmy Page, or then you start playing Andre Segovia. There's a massive difference in the speaking that comes from those three instruments, given the person who is behind the instrument, right? So you could say that at least qualitatively, you're not going to get them mixed up. If you know anything about the three of them, if you hear Hancock, Page, and Segovia, that's like different. And what, you know, are you allowed in some ways to be like straight up, like a Page groupie, and then just like shift into being a Segovia disciple? And is that a fracture in your personality, or is that a freedom that humanity actually allows for, such that a fixed way of being like, no, I don't play Segovia because I'm a Page kind of guy. You know, maybe that's the essence of this thing you're talking about, is that the schizophrenics have a wider open door to go from one who appreciates or who actually plays Segovia level music versus one who plays Hancock music or Hendrix music or Page music or, you know, anything like that. And that would be cool. And I think it's a really interesting thing to consider. And then there's this other piece, which is when I have met as many schizophrenics, and they normally hang out in the hospital, because when you're schizophrenic, that's where they put you. Like when they call you schizophrenic, that's where your number one home tends to be. Is that there is a certain level of very close personality that comes with that identity too. So it isn't like they have equal access at a high level to multiple different ways of being. They're actually kind of burned into a certain schizophrenic type way of being, a musical human, that is similar to each other, that include certain mannerisms, that include certain eating habits, that include certain, cigarette smoking is extraordinarily common in that group, that includes sort of like body habitus. So there isn't this pure nature that the schizophrenic is out there swinging between the vines and, you know, sometimes on an oak tree and sometimes on a, you know, apple tree. And sometimes it's not like that. It's like there is an identity for that true and honest, quote, schizophrenic as well that they acquire. Now, in the article that I wrote in 2019, the award-winning article, probably my proudest article I ever wrote, is that the one that brought me the most pride is Global Madness article that I think you've read before. I speak a little bit to my jealousy and admiration of the freely homeless population, the population that has nowhere to fall down from is societally. Like, that's it. Look, what are you going to do? Fall down from being like indigent and homeless? So there's a freedom that happens in that population that really does allow more for transversing between different characteristics, speaking outside, speaking out loud to yourself, or walking or screaming or laughing, you know, freely, which might in some ways represent the freest human being. Whereas we work so hard to contain ourselves in we who call ourselves not schizophrenic, work so hard to contain ourselves in a fixed way of being so that we pass the test of not being mentally ill or not being diagnosable. And maybe that's not the case at all. Maybe we're the fools. Maybe the freedom really lies over
well,
there.
Well, there's a important point here that I think you're making. And I think, you know, I like this conversation because it feels like we are digging back at we're revealing in a way, in the same way Michelangelo reveals the sculpture through digging away the excess clay. We're digging at the truth beneath the facade, which is, you know, really, I think, the essence of what you're here to do with True Voice Podcast and with your work is, let's dig away at the extra stuff there. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said about what you're speaking to, which is that in a certain way, there is almost a certain kind of sacrifice that comes along with adopting an identity that is consistent enough and inflexible enough so as that you can remember who you need to be in reference to yourself and others on a regular basis, fixed enough so as to be functional within the existing parameters of culture. And that is actually a sacrifice on some level. It requires a certain type of attachment to certain ideas of what one feels that they must have in order to adopt a fixed identity that can be consistent from day to day and say, oh, well, if this ever changes, it's only because, you know, something really big has come up in my life and my career, my relationship falls apart or whatever, and the whole sort of facade falls down and one has to build a new image, a new self-image from there. But what you're pointing to with people who are at the, you know, bottom rung of the social ladder and are, you know, by our culture's estimation, of course, but who, not from any sort of, not from our own judgment, but from society's estimation, and who are homeless, there's this certain freedom because they don't have to be attached to any sort of particular persona to just be as they are. And I think that this is actually pointing in the direction of the freedom that, is at the core of what the Buddha was actually teaching, which is in some respects why I sometimes feel, you know, you're asking me about the Zen warrior moniker, why I sometimes feel a certain amount of almost kind of an imposter type of mentality around that moniker, even though I can justify it in certain ways. But on some level, even having to maintain the structure of that identity from day to day implicitly means that I'm not actually being as Zen as I could be, because the Zen would be throw it all away. It would be, which I would be a little bit concerned would be dysfunctional within the cultural, you know, if I want to have my lights on and want to have a warm house and want to have enough money to pay for my groceries every week, most likely I can't just throw away the persona completely and be totally free or as free as I possibly could be. I make a certain sacrifice in order to continue to adopt and maintain a somewhat fixed identity that people can relate to, that and that I can relate to enough to keep the lights on and the house warm and the groceries in the refrigerator. So in that respect, you know, I pay respect in a way to the depth of the teaching that Buddha was actually teaching when he was teaching the principles of enlightenment, because in a certain respect, it does require an ascetic lifestyle to truly experience the type of freedom that he spoke of. And I am only so accountable to that, to the, for that freedom. And I will all, there will always be a certain distance between myself and that possibility of that level of freedom because of the attachments that I have in this world.
Right. Fantastically well said. And it really does point to the deep similarity between the true voice moniker that I hold, because if I was really true voice, there'd be nothing to do to help others find their true voice. There's no borders, and I wouldn't have to be the true voice, dude. You know, as if I wouldn't have to be the, it's too un-Zen to be the true voice, dude. So I love this idea that at some point, in order to pay your bills and fill the fridge, that you have to, like, at some point give in to the ascetic lifestyle, you don't trust that if you went there, that the pluses of going there don't quite yet outweigh the minus or the fears about going there. You could go there. Mm-hmm. You could, you certainly speak the shit pretty well. You know what it would take. You could do it. It would require a new level of snipping the umbilical cord with what the societal demands are. Like, you're going to have to be something. You might as well be the Zen warrior. That's pretty close. A way to out there and stuff. And then some people will pay you, or you'll be able to carry around that moniker and that, that title, that identity. And then, it sort of works. It sort of works to a level until on the edges you start realizing that it is kind of a sham, or at least an imposter syndrome. And I share the same thing about this true voice exactly, you know. And I guess, TJ, if we're not back next week, you'll know that we hit the road. We went Hunter Thompson on the whole thing, and we'll get back to you sometime later. and tell your dad and your uncle that it was all good. Thanks so much. And, we'll write some books or get some videos or something and let you know what's happening. That could happen, because we're both on the edge right now of giving up our primary identities and going doing that which we say we profess to do. Yeah, we'll write some books. We'll write some books for sure.
And I also don't want to have any kind of romanticism about the freedom that is implied by that sort of ascetic lifestyle too. You know, because who's to say that that level of freedom is inherently enjoyable?
Not enjoy. If enjoyment is what you're after, I'm not suggesting.
Or fully liberating.
Or liberation. Yeah. If that's what you're after, no, I wouldn't do that either.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What are we after?
Like, we got 2 minutes to talk about like what should we be after in life? Truth, Zen, warrior, communication. Yeah.
Relative truth.
Relative.
Relative Zen.
Relative Zen.
Yeah, maybe that's what we're after.
All right.
Maybe we're at truthiness, and zeniness.
Zeniness
and truthiness.
Oh my God. Zeniness. Zeniness.com. All right. Sam, how can people find the Zen Warrior?
Sam at ZenWarriorTraining.com.
And what are they going to find when they get there?
Absolutely nothing, but I'll respond to them if they email me.
Yeah.
I'm expecting thousands of emails to come in.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Especially around this conversation.
Yeah, you're going to have to go with the increased gigabytes for your email alone.
That's right. That's right.
And so you can find me at, you can actually find me on my Linktree. There's a lot of places there. It's linktr.ee/FredMoss. You could see me everywhere there. I think it's time to say goodbye. Say goodbye and say hello. First there is a mountain. Then there is no mountain. And then there is. It's just the way it goes. It's just the way it goes. Yeah. TJ, sign us off, bro. Thanks for your great work today and your inquisitiveness. We'll catch you on the flip side. Sam, see you next week. And before then, I love you dearly. Be good.
Love you dearly too, Fred.
Peace.
Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?